This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Caution after the craziness.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Good to have you along this Monday morning as we continue our coverage of the fallout of the financial crisis. One thing is for sure, investors are more than happy to put October behind them. Market volatility was so intense last month, there were just 3 days we didn't see the Dow rise or fall in triple digits. The Dow was down 14% for the month. But this first trading day of November happens to land on the day before the big presidential election, so no surprise there's a little caution on Wall Street this morning. Stocks started on a mixed note, but now the Dow is up 81 points, about 0.8% to 9406. The NASDAQ is up 0.9%. The S&P 500 up nearly 0.6%. Shares in Europe are mixed. Markets in Asia were mostly higher today. Along with the election, another piece of the caution we're seeing comes from a new survey of economists out today. It suggests we're already in recession. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has the latest from New York.
About a third of people responding to the survey said demand for their goods and services increased between late summer and early fall. But here's the catch. 35% say demand fell. The last time the survey turned out this way was 2001, when the economy went into a recession. The group that puts out the survey, the National Association of Business Economists, says this indicator's been predicting recessions for more than 25 years. The quarterly survey talks to around 100 business economists. Roger Kubarich is chief U.S. economist at UniCredit Global Markets. He says NABE's survey results look a lot like other surveys we've seen recently.
It's not a unique picture. It's basically confirming a picture that we've been quite aware of for some time.
Besides, he says, it's hard to judge the significance of these numbers because there are so many unknowables. Numbers on factory orders are out tomorrow. Oh, and there's an election. And then on Friday, the Labor Department releases the big monthly employment report. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Until now, wagering in exotic investments known as credit default swaps has gone on mostly unregulated. This week, the private operator of a central registry for that type of trading is set to start publishing some new information. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports.
The value of all the credit default swaps in circulation is around $40 trillion, or maybe $50 trillion. Nobody knows for sure, which is why there's growing pressure to shine a light into this very dark room. The initial data might not amount to much more than a candle, but Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics believes even a glimpse of the monster should shock regulators into action.
Of course it's helpful to have more transparency, but people definitely are not going to like what they see.
Whalen says banks are still hoarding their cash because they're worried they can't cover all their bad bets. Henry Hugh is a securities law professor at the University of Texas. He says those massive wagers need to be exposed.
It gives you both a heads up on where the trouble might be, and also, if trouble happens anyway, you have a better sense how you should intervene or whether you should intervene.
Put another way, he says it helps in deciding who really needs to be bailed out and who might not be too big to fail after all. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Morning Report for Monday, November 3rd at marketplace.org. The credit crunch is biting deeper into global trade. There's been a big jump in financing costs for shipping international cargo. Stephen Beard reports from London.
The cost of finance for exporters and importers has more than doubled in recent weeks, and often the finance is not available at all. The World Trade Organization is so alarmed it's called a meeting of major banks in Geneva next week. international trade is undoubtedly shrinking. Many of the big dry bulk cargo ships that usually carry raw materials like iron ore and grain lie idle. There's little doubt, says shipping broker Tony Westbrook, the slump is mainly due to lack of credit.
We are seeing factories in China needing less raw materials because demand of some of their finished goods is slowing, but that would not have had the effect on the market that the credit situation has had. It is primarily a credit crunch situation.
There is now so little demand for shipping that the biggest bulk cargo vessels are losing their owners up to $9,000 a day. Many are trying to pull their ships out of service and into mothballs. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
China's tainted food scandal continues to widen. First, the toxic chemical melamine turned up in infant formula, then the whole dairy chain, and then eggs. Now it's further up the global food chain in animal feed. Over the weekend, Chinese authorities said they're intervening massively to clean this all up. From Shanghai Marketplace's Scott Tong has more.
Chinese food inspectors seized or destroyed 3,600 tons of animal feed laced with melamine. That's 2% of what they sampled, according to state media. In the last few days, local media have reported it's an open secret that the makers of fish, hog, and chicken feed doctor their products with a toxic chemical. Melamine acts as a fake protein and is linked to kidney damage. So far, this food crisis has contained itself largely to mainland China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. But there's growing concern about Chinese fish farms. They produce 35% of the seafood products consumed around the globe. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Detroit's big automakers will announce U.S. sales figures today. And at a time when Americans are cutting back on just about everything, it's probably wise not to get your hopes up. Then again, oil prices are dropping fast, and an industry that had all but settled on manufacturing smaller, more efficient cars may now be thinking twice. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has more.
Okay, odds are if you're one of the people in America with a pickup truck, it ain't a luxury, it's a way of life.
This is Ford's latest pitch for its monster pickup truck, the F-150. The company said last week it'll rehire 1,000 employees and ramp up production. Joe Philippi is president of Auto Trends Consulting. He says Ford's move doesn't mean automakers are reversing course because of falling gas prices.
They'll get plenty of years going forward out of big pickups and SUVs, but the market is going to be a lot smaller than it was in the past.
Philippi says demand for giant vehicles will mostly come from those who actually need them. He says automakers are well aware of that.
They're definitely afraid of zigging when the market suddenly starts zagging, but a broad array of consumers have truly changed their attitude.
He says even if gas prices go low and stay there, consumers aren't currently inclined toward big, expensive vehicles. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
While you were pilfering your kids' Halloween candy haul over the weekend, you may not have noticed the holiday shopping season started. Yeah, Kmart introduced early Black Friday with big price cuts on electronics and home appliances. As Stacey Vanek-Smith reports, it's all about fighting the ghoulish economy.
I'm going to Kmart to go Christmas shopping.
Wait, Christmas? Didn't we just carve pumpkins?
Yes, we did. But Kmart's Terry Brophy says shoppers need a little extra time this year.
Customers have said to us, we're going to have to start early this Christmas to make sure we can get everything pulled together and be able to afford it.
These kinds of pre-season sales are one way retailers hope to get budget-conscious consumers to buy big-ticket items like flat-screen TVs and video game consoles, says Candace Corlett, president of WSL Strategic Retail.
Gas prices are down. Maybe they pick up a Christmas present now. And they try to spread the pain of spending for the holidays out across 2 or 3 months.
Corlett says Walmart started the push with broad price cuts. Target and others quickly followed suit. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
So the biggest question for markets this week, how will stocks respond to the election?
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
As we head into the last day of campaigning, lawmakers in Washington are tossing around ideas for that second government stimulus package. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is here. And Alan, I want to know what your take is so far on this stimulus part two discussion.
I suspect, Renita, that the stimulus package is not so much about stimulating the economy, but stimulating votes tomorrow, because the incumbents want to show that not only rich people and big corporations could get, say, $1 trillion from the government, but regular people can get their own hundreds of billions of dollars. So why not, as long as we're throwing these unimaginable amounts of money around, why not throw some of it to regular people, which might help a few people keep their seats?
You had state leaders, trade groups, economists all descending on the House last week to sort of talk about what should be next, looking at a lot of ideas that are going out right now, including guarantees for municipal debt.
But that has nothing. The only thing that stimulates is bond owners. This has nothing to do with stimulating the economy. If you want to say, let's ensure this, let's do that, let's do public works, fine, let it rise or fall on its own merits. But to call it stimulus is the kind of thing that ought to get the Federal Trade Commission, if it's still alive, after you for false labeling.
Well, in fact, as I understand it, the first stimulus bill had initially included some money for infrastructure spending and those kinds of things, but ended up being taken out because the fear was, you know what, putting this into construction projects would take too long to create any sort of economic benefits. You know, people wouldn't feel like something's happening.
Right. There was also, forgive me, a political component to that, as I remember, where the Republicans were against it because, you know, ideologically. And I'm sure the Republicans would still ideologically be against public works. I might even be ideologically against public works. But public works worked really well as a long-term thing in the Depression. I think it's clear that they worked, that it worked well. This isn't the Depression, and we're talking about giving the economy a shot in the arm, and public works won't do it.
Where's your head right now with all this talk of psychology?
My head is doing where it always is, Renita. I'm just trying to survive and take care of myself and my family.
I hear that. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan, happy voting to you.
And to you as well, Renita.
Quick final note for you. Circuit City just announced it's closing 20% of its U.S. stores. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.